Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yeah, I think that people always point to the Yankees in 16, but I think there's plenty of other examples of teams that had a year where they struggled. I think if you look at what the Red Sox have done, they won the World Series in 13, and 14 and 15 they struggled. They won the division in 16, 17, won the World Series in 18, struggled in 20. You know, I think they've picked in the top 10 like three times, and they won a bunch of World Series in that time. So I think, just using them as an example of sometimes there's a lot of stability. Like we've had that period, and sometimes, a team has a year they go down and they go right back up. So I think using the Yankees in 16, I think that's probably a fairly apt way to look at it, but I wouldn't put any kind of label name on it.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
You know, they've told you exactly what the idea was, but just how short are we talking about? That is Jed Hoyer having told you that they want to go backwards very, very briefly, like the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Giants, perhaps, as opposed to the Phillies, who fell off the table after the Rollins and Ryan Howard years, or the Tigers, who fell off the table once Mike Ilitch passed away and those teams got bad. But just how short a window are they talking about in terms of going backwards, and just how aggressive does that mean they'll be this offseason? It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. A full show, baby! A full show, and it'll be our last one for a while as football takes over, those bastards. And I know that our next guest, Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic, the Cubs beat writer, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He will be passionately active on the beat for the Cubs the rest of the way, as long as Illinois is not playing football. Right, Sahadev? I mean, that's fair to say.
I'm not sure if Illinois football can distract me as much as Illinois basketball, but okay. Especially after last night's loss. So I may put Illinois football back on the back burner there.
It was a short run. It was a short run, and really beating Nebraska is just not impressive for anybody. But that, of course, is not why you called. Look, I've enjoyed reading. He's on the team for next year, which. We played the clip of Farmeo. Who was he talking about? I always forget, Sean. It's the catcher, right? It's the catcher they brought over, who was a big part of the 2011 final day when there was like all those games of consequence and on the last night of the regular season. Damn it. I don't know.
I can't remember who it was, but I know that the player was DFA'd soon after. And honestly, it's that drop that inspired that piece, because I would be watching the Cubs, and there's all, these no-name Cubs after the trade deadline, and I kept thinking that drop would come into my head as someone
He's
got
on the team for next year.
There it is.
Yeah, it would just pop right in, and I was like, I got to write about this.
Yeah.
So thank you for the inspiration.
Oh, my God, of course. It's Dan, what was his name? Dan Johnson. I think it's Dan Johnson who hit a big home run in game 162 for the Tampa Rays. I think that's who it is, but we'll figure that out. But either way, all right, so let's just do some basics. Obviously, Patrick Wisdom making the amount that he's going to make with the control that he's going to control and the flexibility he's shown defensively is on the team for next year. is Rafael Ortega pretty much guaranteed a roster spot, if not a starting spot, in the outfield for next year? One would think a lefty bat who hits it that hard and has shown the ability to play center and left, that he's probably on the team for next year, right?
You know, here's how I look at it. I think Wisdom has done enough and shown a skill set, a particular skill set as far as defensive value and the ability to crush pitches, you know, below the upper third of the zone, and a solid batting eye, that yeah, he should be around in some way. I don't think you can go into the winter and plan your winter around saying anybody is on the team for sure or has a specific role. I think it's really interesting what these guys are doing. Ortega's one of those guys. I just think you can't go into your offseason and plan anything around these guys. You can't make moves and say, well, this guy's, well, Ortega is there, so I can't sign so-and-so, right?
Right.
It just can't be that way. The Jed can't think that way. The front office won't be thinking that way. But I think what we're seeing right now, some of it is small sample size, sure. I mean, Frank Schundel isn't going to hit like this over the course of 162. But there's something to be said for the pro scouting, for their ability to kind of unearth these guys. And of course, there's something to be said for the players taking an opportunity and running with it and performing. So I think it's good for – I mean, how long have we been talking about this? I know I've brought it up a lot to you and others, that the Cubs look at other organizations with envy that – they can develop players at the major league level that nobody has heard of, all of a sudden becoming regulars, and sometimes much more than that. You know, you think of Max Muncy, you think of what the A's do, you think of some players like Gio Urshela on the Yankees. These are guys that are regulars for playoff-caliber teams, and the Cubs just really haven't developed those guys. I don't know if any of these guys are at even close to that caliber over a full season, but I think it's a good sign that the pro scouting is able to identify some talent here and that guys are performing at the major league level.
I think all of those very sensible and intelligent caveats that were just encapsulated in that answer can stand for the rest of the conversation. Like, I know who you are, Sahadev, and hopefully people know who I am, that, like, you don't get blinded and think, oh, my God, they found three guys who are age 30 who are going to be part of the core for the next 4 years, and you could just lock them in and pencil them in. No, but, you know, sometimes you do find a guy who shows you that he deserves an extended chance, and maybe as you're allocating free agent money, you know, and for that middle class of MLB free agents – that you don't have to be desperate to pay for that. You know, I guess that's the broader point that I find myself thinking about is this, that I think we all now agree that paying for middle-aged offensive production, and I'm middle-aged in a baseball sense, say age 28 to 33, right? Paying for that with offensive production from guys of that age, from outfielders and corner infielders, it's not something you want to pay a super high premium for, because there's a lot of people out there who can do it, right? So, like, so why pay at the very top of the market, frankly, for Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, at the very top of their earning power? I think they had sort of decided they didn't want to be the ones to do that. So if they get some production from guys of that age at those kind of positions, other than Baez, at, like, 500 grand, 600 grand, boy, that frees you up to roster build as you figure out where you're good and where you're not. That frees you up an awful lot if you're paying that low a currency for that kind of premium.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. I think what you're seeing with Schwindel, let's see what Rivas can do. Wisdom continues to hit for power. Where can you fit these guys in? You don't have to play them every day. I think the Cubs want that type of flexibility where they can say, listen, this pitcher throws a ton of fastballs. I'm putting Schwindel in today, and then tomorrow I'm putting in Rivas because the pitcher that he's facing, he matches up better with that guy. And it's not just a left-right platoon thing. Go watch the San Francisco Giants and see how they platoon their players. Yeah, they have some regulars. You need regulars that you can build around and really rely on. But you also need flexibility with your roster. And I know that that's something that Jed wants, that David Ross values. They're looking for more flexibility with their roster. They're not looking for, this is our set roster, this is who we're playing every day in the lineup. That's not really how it works anymore. I mean, the best teams move their players around and they shift their lineups. It's not a set lineup. And I know, I mean, I'm already getting bad flashbacks to Twitter about people yelling about Joe Maddon switching the lineup too much. I mean, just watch the Rays. Watch the Giants. These are some of the best teams in baseball. They don't have a set lineup. And if you – now, there's something to be said that certain players need everyday playing time and kind of expect it and feel that. Well, maybe the Cubs – maybe that doesn't fit the Cubs' mold, and maybe they're not looking for those types of players. They're looking for more flexible players who can play – certain guys will play every day. Certain guys are going to play 100 games, and some guys are just going to play here and there. And I think it can work if you have the right manager and I always go back to what Theo and Jed say. We have to be right, and they have to hit on some free agent picks, many free agent picks over this winter and next.
Yeah, they've got a manager who's a full-on partner now. You know, and that's that, right. like Kevin Cash is, like Alex Cora is, like Aaron Boone is. This is a full-on partner situation, all due respect to Joe Maddon, where they know that this manager will help them, get their ideas across and do what best they can. Before we continue on the specifics of the Cubs, how are people platooning guys these days? Is it about type of pitches they're good against? Is it also about like swing path versus pitch path, looking at those kind of matchups? It's obviously not just about handedness anymore.
Yeah, it's you nailed it with the swing path stuff. The path that the pitch comes in and where your swing path is, location of pitches. That's something that I've heard that the Giants are big on. This guy works the outside and this hitter just mashes these pitches on the outside. This guy works the inside. Well, this guy's better with inside pitches, up, down, stuff like that. You probably don't want Patrick Wisdom facing a pitcher who can really command the upper third of the zone, right? Now, if a guy tries to work the upper third of the zone and he misses down, Patrick Wisdom is going to crush that pitch. But if he can locate up in the zone and actually keep it in the zone, that's Patrick Wisdom's hole. So you sit Patrick Wisdom against a guy like that, right? So, I mean, once you have that type of roster and can pull off those type of moves, that's when you're truly flexible and really able to maximize all 26 men, I guess 28 men in September.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hermosillo is a fascinating prospect because of his speed, his athleticism. You've seen some real good defense in center field. And because there have been specific swing changes, do people think he really has a shot as a late bloomer? Or this would be fourth guy that we're talking about with potential as a position player late bloomer, which is crazy.
Yeah, there's definitely people in the organization who believe that. They believe there are some things with his swing. I've been told that the metrics that they have, how they can measure everything now, some of the metrics that they look at for a player's swing are the best of Hermosillo's career. He's really efficient with his swing right now. We've seen too much swing and miss early on. It's too early to say that Frank Schwindel is an MVP candidate for 2022. It's too early to say that Michael Hermosillo isn't ready to take this opportunity and run with it. Even some of his outs, I've liked the contact he's made. You talked about the defense in center field. That's certainly valuable. This is going to be a fun month in the sense that, yeah, they don't have top prospects like Brennan Davis coming up. But I want to see what Hermosillo can do. I want to keep seeing if Schwindel can keep this up for September. What is Ortega and Wisdom? What do they do? Can they keep this up? One more month of it. It doesn't guarantee anything. But it's seeing more production and getting more data to say, like, yep, another good month added to the ledger that they have. We have more information and we can feel a little bit more confident going into the winter that these guys will be part of the mix.
A tremendous amount of money comes off the books. There will be lots of spending available. Everything they've said sure feels like they want to try and be competitive sooner rather than later. Where do you expect the free agent signings to be? We've talked about Castellanos before, but in terms of pitching, Would they dare spend big money on starting pitching, like $100 million starting pitching contracts? I mean, they're going to need some top end front of the line pitching. That's for sure.
Yes, they need to spend on pitching. Will they give out a 5-6-7 year deal? I'd be shocked. I think look for value is what I'd say. Look for does someone come in for like just fall through the cracks of the market, and then suddenly a guy that was looking for a 4-year deal is willing to take a 2-year deal, and the Cubs really like this player. They'll pounce on that. Guys that any 1-year deal will make sense. It doesn't really matter the cost, right? 1-year deals, you don't freak out about the cost because it's a 1-year deal. And I just don't think they're at the point. They will be. They will be again at some point. But this offseason isn't the point where they're going to jump. They're going to win the bidding for a guy that's at the top of the market, right? Because when you get the guy that's at the top of the market, you're automatically, in theory, you're overpaying, right? Because you're paying the most. So outside of very rare instances, you're paying the most for that guy, and they look at that as overpaying. And sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it makes sense. There are times when you pounce. Prior to, 2015, you pounced on John Lester. That's sure. An opportunity. They're not at that point right now. That doesn't mean that this is going to be a long rebuild or that they want it to be, right? I'll have to believe it when I see it, I guess, for them to be able to pull off something quicker than what they did before, because I know everyone thought that was a long time. Guess what? That was pretty quick, like what they did when they first arrived, especially with what they were working with. And I'm not sure. I know they don't want it to be long. They'd like to be competitive next year, but also very realistic that, hey, the type of deals that they're going to sign, they can, if they're not competitive by the deadline, they'll be able to move those players as long as some of them are performing well. But ideally, they're semi-competitive next year and really ready to compete for real in 2023. And then we'll see when the time is for them to really pounce at the top of the market. But I would tell you right now, don't expect huge deals. Expect what they'll view as smart deals. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be bad players or players you've never heard of. It's just, maybe Javi Baez falls through the cracks. He's not having a great season, right? So maybe that's a shortstop and a loaded shortstop class that kind of ends up sticking around for a little bit on the market and says, you know what, I'm taking a 1-year pillow contract. I feel comfortable in Chicago. They're going to pay me enough for a year, and I know I can rebuild my value and head back into free agency the following winter in a place that I'm really comfortable playing, and I know they'll let me play the way I want to play, and I feel comfortable with David Ross, all those things, right? And I'm not just limiting it to hobby. There's plenty of names out there. Just go scan some of the pitchers that are in their very late 20s or early 30s, guys that could be looking for 1-year deals, guys that have talent. I remember seeing like a name like Dylan Bundy. If he's healthy, that makes sense. Noah Syndergaard, makes sense, right? These are guys that are probably looking for 1-year deals or end up with 1-year deals and have a tremendous upside. You've got to hit, though. The Giants hit. Look at their starting rotation. Right? Yes. Who on there, when they signed those, did you say, oh, wow, the Giants signed so-and-so, Discalfani, when they first signed Gausman? These weren't guys that were at the top of the market, and they nailed it. They were right, right? And they need to continue to be right. The Cubs need to be right and nail some undervalued pitchers. I think that's the biggest thing. You've got to nail the pitching. Somehow they've figured something out, at least it looks like, these last few months with the offense. I mean, this offense isn't much worse than it was when, pre-deadline, really. I mean, it doesn't look that way. At least maybe that's a little recency bias on my part. But I think you can't. The reason this season sunk and the reason it's continuing to look rough is the starting pitching. They have to fix it, and they need to be aggressive with it.
Yeah, you brought up some names that I was sitting here looking at on SpotTrack in terms of the free agents. Syndergaard is a fascinating one to me. And both DeSclafani and Gausman are free agents again. So it's very interesting. But last thing, you mentioned Javi. Look, I have brought that up specifically, like especially after the thumbs down thing. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, the crowd loves you here. Not so much there, but we know the crowd loves you here. And we know how important that is to Javi. But I got to tell you, the last few paragraphs of the piece you wrote with Patrick Mooney, and I love when you guys double team a story like that about the trade deadline, it really read like there are some within the organization who look at the entire Javi experience as, whew, we survived that. You know, like he was exciting enough, beloved enough that his shortcomings didn't really make the public turn on him and didn't really cost him and cost the franchise that much. We survived, and now the Mets are the ones realizing the issues. So it gave me pause that this would be possible, him coming back. But you just breathed it a little life there as well. Like, to me, it makes all the sense in the world as that 1 or 2 year pillow deal with potential for him to reclaim value for in a market that's just not going to have very much to offer him, I don't believe.
Yeah, you know, I just think he's comfortable here, like I said before, and it makes a ton of sense if the value's right, if the contract's right. They have a history, too. I mean, it's public knowledge that they were close. If the pandemic didn't hit, I don't think we'd be talking about Javi Baez in another uniform. He would have found, they would have come to terms on an extension. He'd be here for the long term, right? And obviously things would be very different without a pandemic overall. But that's one thing that I'm pretty sure about, that they were really close on a deal, and that would have been finalized before the end of spring training 2020. I don't know if he's really going to fall through the cracks and end up with the Cubs, but I think it makes a lot of sense because I don't think you can go into next year with Nico Horner as your shortstop. I love the guy as far as his work ethic, his contact rate, just in general how enthusiastic he is. But right now he hasn't shown me that he can stay on the field or that he can handle a full season of shortstop. I don't think you want to go into next year with Madrigal and Horner as your up the middle infield defense. If you do, it's fine, but it's also that you're telling me that 2022 isn't really a year that you're really expecting to compete or even surprise, and you better have some swing and miss in your rotation a lot more than you have now.
Sahadev, thank you so much. It is indeed Dan Johnson, who Ed Farmer was talking about, saying he's on the team for next year. Dan Johnson hit that big, big home run with Tampa Bay in 2011. And that was a magical game 162 home run, which really forced Theo Epstein to Chicago, among other things, that end of the year. But then last day of 2013, he hit three homers for the White Sox against the Cleveland Indians, leading Farmio to shout that out. But it was not true. Thanks so much. You're the best, and enjoy your September. We'll talk to you.
Thanks so much. Take care, Steve.
You got it, man. That's Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic. It is 670 The Score. What does the man who sits above the team and watches these guys every day think? We'll ask Ron Coomer next. By the way, there's a White Sox lineup in for their finisher against Kansas City. Robert, Moncada, Abreu at DH, Eloy in left. Andrew Vaughn gets the day off, and Brian Goodwin will play in right field. Leury Garcia at second. Gavin Sheets with the start at first base. Then Danny Mendick and Sebi Zavala with the start as Yasmani Grandal gets a day off. It's 670 The Score. Ron Coomer next on Hit and Run.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I don't know what the definition of a rebuild is. I think you should wait until you see after what we do this winter to decide what we're going to do. Like, I don't know what we're going to do yet. So no one knows what we're going to do yet. We're going to sit down and we're going to figure out the right path to try to build a championship team. And like, sometimes that path might mean like letting the garden grow for a long time because you need to let those prospects mature. And sometimes it may mean accelerating it through free agency. Like, I don't know the answer, but like this idea that like anyone knows how we're going to pursue it, I don't know yet. We're going to do the right thing strategically. And I think we have to figure that out. And, you know, sometimes opportunities are what determine that.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
It is indeed Hit and Run. Jed Hoyer talking about the rebuild or whatever the hell the thing is called, and a little frustrated. I get it. He said, I don't know what we're going to do. So nobody else knows what we're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. I do know that I'm really enjoying watching some of these guys play baseball right now, and that they've won five in a row. And yesterday, the finish of that was exciting and fun. And in a town where the White Sox are dominating the baseball landscape, and for good reason, they are very good. We talked a lot of White Sox in hour one. We'll talk plenty of White Sox in hour two, or in hour three, I should say. But it's nice to be able to stretch out here in hour two and talk about some good Cubs things of the moment and try to figure out what the future holds as well. And we do it next with our friend Ron Coomer, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Ron Coomer, former Cub and All-Star, joins us right now on The Score. Hello, Coom. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Spiggs. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. It's a beautiful day. It's going to be warm and delightful. The Cubs, as you've watched them, have won five in a row. They're playing pretty well, aren't they? Are you enjoying this? Has this been a nice moment amidst what has at times obviously been a very awkward moment, awkward season? This is a good moment right here for that crew.
Yeah, the Cubs, they've played very good baseball. Young guys have swung the bats well, and at the end of the day, you know, they've pitched it better. I mean, you got to pitch it to have any success in our league. And over the last five ball games, when they've had a hiccup with the pitching, they've pulled the trigger quick to get someone out of there because they've been in the game and get someone new in. And those guys that have come in have kind of held serve for a while. And then the bats either have gotten the lead, found the lead late in the game, or, you know, they have a walk-off. So, you know, it's been fun, and it's nice to see some of these young guys get a little, you know, have a little success too. Not really young guys, but inexperienced guys, probably the best way to describe it. To see them have a little bit of success here right now is good.
Yeah, you know, are you watching with one eye on the future? Do you try to stay in the moment? Because I can't help but watch these guys and think about who might stick for next year.
I definitely think you have to. You know, you wouldn't be human if you weren't looking to see, you know, you play, you know, you heard you played the Jed Hoyer thing, comment about the rebuild. But we all look at, you know, and you speculate on how this would fit for next year and what's going to happen. So we all look at it. Yeah, sure.
Coom, you're 28 when you get to the Twins in 95, or were you 27 and turned 28 at that point?
I was 20. I believe I was 28. That's been a long time ago now, buddy. But yeah, I think I was 28 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 28 years old in 95 when you finally hit the big leagues. I mean, we're looking at guys, Ortega's 30, Wisdom's 30, Schwindel's 30, Hermosillo's 26. It's like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that you've hit on a couple of these guys who just needed the chance to show it and can learn stuff on the big league level, right? Did that happen for you? Did you learn a bunch at the big league level right from the get-go in 95, 96, at age 28, 29?
I was a guy, Spiegs, the 2 years before that in the minor leagues, I was a really good offensive player in the minor leagues. You know, I was a 25 and 110, 120, you know, hitting in, 320. So offensively, everybody thought I could be a big league player. It was to be determined whether I could play defensively in the big leagues, and nobody knew, right? You just didn't get a chance. So, yeah, I did learn the defensive side of the game from Tom Kelly to be more consistent. But I was probably, I was just stuck. I was stuck behind Robin Ventura, and then I was stuck behind Tim Wallach, and that's just kind of what it is. But with that being said, I do believe there are some guys that we have that are big league players and they're showing it. You know, they're just a little advanced in their age compared to most rookies, that's all.
Tell me what you see when you watch Frank Schwindel hit, because he's the one, it's taken the longest for me to buy into the fact that there might be something here. Like, I'm sold on Wisdom getting a shot next spring. I'm sold on Ortega getting a shot next spring. I love the consistency with which that dude seems to barrel it up when he barrels it. But what are you seeing with Frank that we should be noticing as fans?
Well, I think the couple things. One, he's not chasing a lot of pitches out of the zone. That's a positive. We know he's got big-time pop in his bat. We've seen it. So that's a positive. And to me, he's covering both sides of the plate. So he's covered the fastball inside. They've started pitching him away. He's not chasing the slider away, but he's covering a fastball away. And it was a fastball away that he hit for a homer a couple days ago. And then he got a ball in the middle, and he hit it off the scoreboard, the video board, yesterday. So, he's doing what he's supposed to do. The last thing I feel, can he consistently use the other side of the diamond like he has? And when they start spinning the ball over and over and over, can you sit on a breaking ball and use the other side of the diamond? Because there's going to come a time where him and Wisdom is experiencing that now, where they're going to have to do that or sit on breaking ball and wait for a hanger, but they're going to have to do that to be successful in the league.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at his swing percentages, his like outside the zone swing percentages, those kind of things, looking for clues on it. But you're right. He's hammering fastballs, and that's good. You want to be able to absolutely kill fastballs. When he starts getting junked up like crazy, how do you drive people to throw you more fastballs so you can hammer them? How do you do that? I guess by laying off the junk, if you can pick it up, huh?
Well, you lay off the pitches out of the zone, and there's certain at-bats where you can sit on breaking ball. Nobody said you can't hit a breaking ball. It's just for some hitters, you sit on it. You know you're going to see it. So if they spin one up there and it's right in the middle of the plate, you knock the dog out of it. That's how you get another fastball, That's just that simple.
Seems to be a fairly good way to do it. All right, so we're watching the new. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're watching the newbies. Anybody else that deserves some consideration here other than the four guys that I've talked about a bunch? Talked about Wisdom, talked about Ortega, talked about Hermosillo, and obviously Schwindel. Hermosillo I find really interesting. But like, who else? What do you think about Alfonso Rivas, who you're just getting a look at very briefly here over the last week so far?
Rivas is interesting because he brings a different skill set. He's more of a he hasn't been that since he's been called up, but this is 1 week, right? So his skill set is a put the ball in play, and I think next year, the Cubs are going to have some strikeout guys. That's just the way it is in our league. So you need guys to put the ball in play, and you need to have lineups like that at times. Nico Horner, I was listening to the show, and some people aren't convinced Nico is going to be the shortstop. If you don't sign another shortstop or they're priced out of your range, that kid's got to play. He's your first-round pick. He's a heck of a player. He pulled a rib cage. He's got to play. And he's a shortstop in college. You drafted him as a shortstop. So just because he did well at second doesn't mean he can't play short. He's just not going to be Javi Baez at shortstop. He's not going to do the spectacular, but he's going to make the routine. But he has to play. In our team situation, too, he's got to play. So you got two contact guys in the middle, and to the point they got to stay healthy. But you had two contact guys in the middle of the infield. After that, you got to roll the dice and see what happens. Cubs are going to need another catcher. They definitely are going to need one more outfielder. You're probably looking at a platoon in left, and you're going to need a center fielder. Would be my take, or a left fielder. pick which one you want to go after.
Yeah, depending on who's available and depending on what you do with Ortega and Happ. Well, look, I hear you on Nico. I think Sahadev and others have expressed this thing about Nico because he hasn't been healthy. You know, he's only played, 30-some games in what has been a big opportunity this year. But he's proven he deserves to play when he can be healthy. Sounds like you'd have no problem, assuming he's healthy, going into next year with Nico at short, Madrigal at second, and see what you got from those guys.
Well, I think you've made these trades, right? Mm-hmm. You've made these adjustments in the roster. So the moves are kind of made already, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, you've got to give some of these guys the chance and see how that's going to work out. That's just that simple. So, you know, that's what you got to look at to me. Those moves have been made. You got other spots on the roster that you need to worry about. One's a first round pick, one's a recent trade. They got to play. Just that mm-hmm. simple.
Yeah, and they're both first round picks from their recent orgs. And you know what, you could do a lot worse than having two guys totally cost controlled the next 4 or 5 years playing positions like that and giving you lots of contact. Like, there's nothing wrong with that in a league full of swing and miss to have a couple of guys who don't fit that profile playing in the middle. You wouldn't have to go out and buy guys like that at the deadline, like we've seen them do year after yeah. year with the Daniel Murphys of the world and other guys like that, right?
Right.
You have these guys' profile.
League, mm-hmm. Yeah, the league has taught too many guys the swing and miss approach at the plate. It's just it's been screwed up. It's just that simple. And everybody thinks now you need to be an upswing, you know, hit the ball out of the park and not hit the ball on the ground. What you're trying to stay away from is the rollover ground ball, right? That the 15 hopper is what you're trying to stay away from. You're trying to get guys to hit more line drives and stay in the hitting zone longer with the barrel so they can put the ball in play. So there's so many guys now that don't belong hitting the ball in the air over and over and over because they don't have the power to hit home runs. And now you've got a couple of them. So you've got a few, use them, right? I mean, it's just that simple. You know, having everybody in your lineup trying to hit the ball in the seats, I it's not winning baseball. It's just not.
Ron Coomer with us here on 670 The Score. Coom, after the 1st of June, when people got wind that they were going to be coming down hard on the sticky stuff, and then certainly late June when they did, we saw a lot of adjustments. We saw certain pitchers damaged. And now we've seen things kind of level off a little bit. What's the scuttlebutt around the league? I heard somebody say to me that that they think they might have figured out another way, whether they do it before the inning and then it's just not on the glove, it's not on the hat, it's not on the belt, but oh, by the way, it's on the hand. Or you know what I mean? Like what are people saying? Do they think that pitchers have figured out another way or have they just adjusted to the new reality?
I think there's been more of an adjustment than there is figuring things out for another way. I'm sure there's some guys trying to do that because they had nothing to lose, right? So that's okay to me, and that's always going to happen in every industry. Here's the thing you don't see any longer. You don't see the curveball game after game after game bouncing 5 feet in front of home plate, right? We don't see that now. You don't see the pulled breaking ball to where the catcher can't even dive into the other batter's box to try to catch it. You know, we were seeing that every day from the great pitchers in our game, and then also the guys that are, you know, 25, 26 men on the roster. So, you know, we're not seeing that every day. So to me, they've reeled this problem in enough to where it's back to, you know, normal baseball.
Oh, okay, good. Well, that's good. I'd love to hear that eye test report because I know he was driving you crazy to see the 55-foot spiked curves that just had
yeah,
no
what
shot.
You've seen, Maddie, you've seen guys that just, you know, have fallen off their production. You know, they're not, you know, that you know, they've moved from being barely on the roster to close to a setup guy, right? And, well, because they're cheating. Well, now they're not able to cheat anymore, and now they're back to where they should be in the league. That's, you know, that's just kind of, you know, is what it is.
Me and my wife, Coom, me and Christine, have a couple that we love who live in Minnesota. And every year they come to Wrigley for a game. And every year we go to Target Field for a game just as an excuse to see each other too, you know? So we were there this week for that game when Steele and Adbert Alzali piggybacked for a quick Cubs win. But took a picture in front of the Kirby Puckett statue over there.
Yeah.
And you guys crossed over in 95. I know you loved Kirby. What did he teach you? You know, what's something he taught you in that clubhouse when you were a kid, Coom?
Well, I think the one thing that Puck taught everybody, including me, is how to play the game the right way. You know, Puck never took a game off. He never took a play off. He hustled down the line every play. You never saw a ball get blooped in and him not make it to second base. He just didn't do that. Those weren't things that he did. And he played hard, and he played every day. You didn't have to come to the park if you were the manager wondering if number 34 was going to be in the lineup. He was in the lineup, and you had to take him out because he was going to play all the time. That's just the way it was. And, you know, I had a lot of respect for Puck, just all in general. He was just a great guy, and you know, when we first met, my very first day as a Twin, I'll never forget, I, you know, walked up to him. I said, "Hey, Kirby, how you doing?" He goes, "I'm Puck." I said, "Yeah, okay, Puck." He goes, "Where are you from, kid?" And he already knew, but I go, "I'm south side of Chicago." And he goes, "No, you're not. I'm from the south side of Chicago." And that's how we met, and it was great. I'll never forget it.
What's the difference? He was from the southeast side of Chicago, and you're from the southwest side?
He wanted to be known as the guy from the south side of Chicago. I was out. He was in. He's a two-time World Series champ. I was a kid just trying to break into the big league, so I just went along with whatever the heck he said.
Whatever you say, Kirby. Whatever you say.
You got it.
Coom, you're the best. Thanks for the time, man. Enjoy the ball game today, and I'll see you in a week in that booth with you. Looking forward to it very much.
That sounds great. So are we, Spiegs. Have a great rest of the show, and we'll see you soon, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Ron. That's Ron Coomer right there on 670 The Score. Had two of the greatest ballpark food items of my life on Wednesday night at Target Field. I'll tell you about it when we come back. Jose Abreu conversation with Kevin Goldstein at the top of the hour here on The Score.
Hit and Run on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago Sports Station.
So I love going to Target Field in Minnesota. There's so many cool nuances to that ballpark, and there's lots of really good food. Sat behind the plate and ended up going to the Kramarczyk's sausage stand. That's Kramarczyk's, and you can look at them online, buy their stuff online. If you're like somebody who buys beef online and then cooks it at home, Kramarczyk, apostrophe S. Had a Polish with both kraut and grilled onions from behind the plate. Oh, my God. Forgot to get mustard. Was going to go back. Didn't need it because the Polish was that flavorful. Just snapped with every bite and super juicy and flavorful. That was one thing. And someone had told us, told my wife about these mini donuts that you can buy over by center field, over there by center field. And got this little bucket of mini donuts, and I was expecting, I don't know, 5, maybe 10. There was probably 40 mini donuts covered with cinnamon sugar all the way to the bottom of the bucket. And there were four of us. We just kept passing them back and forth for the next four innings until it was a battle. Like, no, you have to have one to finish. You must. We felt nauseated in the best of all possible ways by the end of that. But those were just two remarkable items. The sausage, though, specifically, because like a Polish with grilled onions, darkest sausage, darkest onions, that's my standard. It's really good for those of us who are vegan at home, by the way. But really good. That's my standard for just about all the ballparks. That was better, frankly, than anything I've had at Guaranteed Rate or at Wrigley. And I'm talking pre-pandemic at Wrigley, when there used to be those ladies who had the hot dog and Polish stand way down the left field line. And those were the ones you'd target and go to because they knew how to do the onions the best. And now you can't do it that way. But still, I'm just saying, if you're going to Minnesota, go to Target and get yourself some of those items. I wonder what Kevin Goldstein's favorite ballpark items are. and have been? I'll find out. Kevin, longtime front office man for the Houston Astros. Before that, at Baseball Prospectus. Since then, over at Fangraphs, among other things, and a terrific read on a variety of topics. Most recently, Jose Abreu. We'll talk about that next. One more hour of Hit and Run to go here on 670 The Score. Keep it here with me, Matt Spiegel.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.